The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
No one who lived through the horror of the September 11th terrorist attacks can ever forget the agony and the anguish of that terrible day. It was a terrible day. The images of dark plumes of smoke billowing over Lower Manhattan, the Pentagon, and a field of Pennsylvania, such a beautiful field, are seared into our minds forever. We will never forget. Today, on this solemn anniversary of those monstrous attacks, we remember the 2,977 precious souls who were savagely taken from us on that morning 22 years ago, leaving a void that can never be filled, can never be filled. No matter what happens, it can never be filled. We will say a prayer for each of the beautiful families they left behind, whose pain is beyond comprehension. What they've gone through is not even believable. We honor the firefighters, the great New York PD, police department, what great people they are. They are so great. And the Port Authority officers, the Virginia, DC, and Pentagon police, and the military service members and other first responders, actually all over the country, they acted with supreme heroism and they went to the site of the most heinous crime. They would leave other states far away and go to the World Trade Center site, the Pentagon, they'd go to Pennsylvania. When many cases gave their lives in the line of duty, God bless the memory of all of those who perished in the 9/11 attacks. We will never, ever forget. We will never forget you. We love you. God bless their families and God bless America. Thank you.
You've had an impact on the skyline of New York. What is it like as you see it now?
It's like a whole different skyline. It's like a whole different city and world. I cannot believe the site of Lower Manhattan without the World Trade Center, and therefore we have to rebuild, not necessarily in that form, but we have to rebuild at least as good and maybe better.
There's Donald Trump, that last bit there from just a few days after the attack on 9/11, say that we have to rebuild it even better. I mean, to show that America is back. It didn't exactly happen the way he envisioned it would back in 2001. Today, there's just the smaller Freedom Tower next door, but then the two memorials in the ground, essentially. And it took years for them to even decide what to do at that site. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on this 9/11 anniversary. What are we? I guess 22 years on from that morning, September 11th, 2001. We've got a lot to get to on today's show. Of course, you can get to the live video stream of this show at our website, trumpetdaily.com, and also at our Rumble channel. That's the Trumpet Daily over at Rumble. We replay the show through LFA TV every evening, 8 p.m. Central Time, 9 p.m. on the East Coast. That's at LFA TV. So on May the 5th, 2001, this is just a few months before the attacks on September 11, my father gave a message here in Edmond, Oklahoma, and he talked about how that the world, according to certain Bible prophecies, he said that the world is heading into the last hour before the return of Christ to this earth. We have a book now that goes by that very title. It's been around for a number of years, The Last Hour. And in this book, my father said that there were two dramatic signs signaling the beginning of the last hour. It says, after 6 years, we won the 19 works in that court battle. God, through us, conquered the Antichrist. So he's talking about the Mystery of the Ages lawsuit. We fought for 6 years. And of course, at the time of the September 11 attacks, at the time of the May 5th declaration of that year, we were right in the middle of the years of that six-year lawsuit. All of that's discussed In this book, Raising the Ruins, let me just give you the 800 number in case you'd like to request Mystery of the Eight, or sorry, we'll get that one too. Raising the Ruins and the Last Hour. It's 1-866-930-3024. But Raising the Ruins tells the story of the grueling six-year struggle in court to win the rights to all of Mr. Armstrong's writings, or most of them, all the important ones. 6 years we fought in court and then finally came out on top. And then, of course, right during that same time period, as my father alludes to here in the Last Hour book, he says this spiritual struggle, well, first to finish the thought on Mystery of the Ages, this spiritual struggle, according to John, and that's speaking of 1 John 2, I'll get to that in just a second, it's the primary battle in the last hour. And then he says, I believe the 9/11 terrorist attack dramatically signaled the collapse of America, Britain, and the Middle East, Jews, the little nation called Israel today. So that happened just a few months after he gave that message. And then, of course, the book came along a few months later, and he had time to then add to it the fact that we had been attacked on 9/11 and nearly 3,000 people murdered on that day. Of course, there was the attack at the Pentagon as well, and then that Pennsylvania field that President Trump there alluded to, that narration that he gave over the footage we prepared. I think that was while he was president, President Trump. It says here in 1 John 2 and verse 18, this is where the last hour language comes from. I'll give you the verse from the Revised Standard Version. It says, children, it is the last hour. And as you have heard that Antichrist is coming, so now many Antichrists have come. Therefore, we know that it is the last hour. We know that the Bible, a third of it is prophecy, and 90% of that is for these last days that we're in. And of course, you look at this world, you look at this nation since the 9/11 attacks, and it only adds to the evidence of everything my father wrote back in 2001, 2002 about the last hour. Look at where we are. I read a long post from Sean Davis from The Federalist today on this 9/11 anniversary. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. It's like everything that's said in the last hour. When those buildings came down, are historians going to look back at that? Assuming time went on long enough, would they look back at that as, well, just two buildings came down? Or was that the beginning of the end of the American empire? That's not me. That's not the last hour. That's just a conservative commentator over at The Federalist. I'll get to that later on. In the Last Hour book, my father says, 1 John 2:18 puts time up on stage as the star. We're running out of time. Don't be misled by the fact that the church is building today. I mean, a lot has happened with this campus. I mean, if you think about 2001, that was the very first semester. We started our first semester in August of 2001. 3 weeks later, the Twin Towers come down. I mean, that was a sobering start to this last hour college. Just because we're building, just because we're turning this campus into a Garden of Eden, a utopia, basically. That's what God wants for us to do. I mean, he wants us to keep building right up until Christ's return. But at the same time, when you contrast what's going on this campus with everything that's happening in the world, you see that this world doesn't have very much time left. All those prophecies, more than 100 that detail the events surrounding the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Read Zechariah 14. Setting foot on the Mount of Olives. People want to try to spiritualize this away and just say that, well, it just kind of means something that goes on in your heart, does it? It says here, our building program will only speed the process to get this work done. Things will never return to the way they were. That's my father writing that. I forget when the copyright is. I mean, the messages were in 2001. This one here, it says 2004, I guess, is the first copyright date for the last hour. But he said there that things will never return to the way they were. From now on, we're in the last hour, a time like no other. He says we're going to experience the worst turmoil and violence ever on earth. I mean, time has proven that statement to be true. The benefit of hindsight now, 22 years on. I mean, at the same time, how exciting it is for those of us in God's family to know that we're about to usher in with Christ the beginning of God's kingdom on earth, the establishment of God's government on this earth. And does this earth ever need the government of God? One more quote from the last hour. This is in the early pages of the book. It says, "We may be witnessing the worst hour ever. From now on, we're in the last hour, a time like no other." On page 3, he says here, we now live in a dramatically new and far more dangerous time. It will be the worst hour ever in human history. I mean, this is just the world we live in. I mean, we don't want to sugarcoat it. There is hope. That hope is in the return of Christ. That hope is in the establishment of God's kingdom. You look into the Gospels and you see Christ coming into Galilee preaching the gospel of what? The kingdom of God. The kingdom, God's kingdom. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1, it says, "This know also, that in the last days, perilous or dangerous times shall come." These are the dangerous times we're living in. I mean, look, I see the clock moving pretty quick already. We've got all kinds of stories. You see what this crazy governor in New Mexico did? She's just opened the borders wide. You don't hear as much about New Mexico because that's a blue state. You know, it's a blue legislature. It's a blue governor. So they just don't talk about it. They just open the border and let them in. Now, in Arizona and Texas, you hear a little bit about it. But it's also wide open in New Mexico and California, for that matter. So they're just streaming in, and you've got this war going on, basically, in some parts of Albuquerque between the cartels and the drug pushers, the human trafficking, everything that's going on. And yes, children are getting shot up in the crossfire. And so what does this good governor of New Mexico want to do? She wants to take away the guns from ordinary law-abiding citizens. She wants to suspend the Second Amendment. She says even her oath of office, it's not absolute. She can do what she wants because she's a radical Democrat. I mean, these are the dangerous times we're living in. I saw a tweet where Nike's moving out of its Portland studio or its Portland warehouse. Just too much violence. Employees can't get in and out without being afraid. People are afraid to go out shopping in Albuquerque. Albuquerque, New Mexico. In the last days, perilous times, dangerous times shall come. We're there. We are there. People are scared. People are frightened. And then you see the protesters in Albuquerque showing up with their guns in their holsters. What a time. Mr. Armstrong wrote in The Missing Dimension in Sex, "Since it is a basic truism that a solid family structure is the foundational bulwark of any stable and permanent society, this fact means only one thing. Civilization, as we know, it's on the way down and out." I mean, the family's been obliterated, the family institution. You see that all around as well, right here in America, in Britain, in Judah, especially the Western nations. Civilization is on the way down and out. Let me read to you from an article. This is in November of 2001. So this was just a month or so after the 9/11 attacks. And my father had a piece in the Trumpet magazine. If you don't have the Trumpet, I only have the January issue up here. But subscribe to this as well. You can get a free one-year subscription. All the literature that we offer is offered without cost or obligation. You can get a free one-year subscription to the magazine that gives you tomorrow's news today because of the insight God gives us through Bible prophecy. The 800 number, as you can see there, 1-866-930-3024. You can see there on your screen that November issue back in 2001. And it says here, in a sermon in May, I said we should expect this last hour to be different from any other hour in the history of man. Just 4 months later, the face of the world changed dramatically. The terrorist attack of September 11 changed so much. Many people have mentioned how the world will never be the same again, how it's almost as if we're in a new world. The world has entered its last hour. Satan is about to inflict a great tribulation on the nations of modern Israel. Now, that's discussed at length in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. I do have this up here today as well as we're working to re-expand the library on my table. It got a little overwhelming there, a big, huge pile of free literature that we couldn't offer or advertise on every single program. But today we've got the main ones I want to draw attention to. U.S. and Britain in prophecy. That's the masterpiece that Herbert Armstrong put together as early as the 1940s and then expanded over the years. Went out to more than 6 million households around this world. The United States and Britain in prophecy. Now think about everything that changed, even right here at home in America, right after those 9/11 attacks. The George Bush administration went to work massively expanding the administrative state, the security state, and they had to protect the homeland. Homeland security was started because, well, these guys, they trained these terrorists, they trained in Venice, Florida. I mean, they trained on U.S. soil. So we needed all these agencies to expand and grow. We needed new agencies to spy and to make sure we found these terrorist cell networks. This is from Sundance. The post 9/11 weaponization of the U.S. government. Again, we have the benefit of hindsight now. We can look back over 22 years and see what's happened here. Okay, there's never been another 9/11 style attack. Well, forget about what the communist left says about January 6th. How ridiculous is that? Civil War, Pearl Harbor, 9/11, and January 6th. There's people protesting inside of Kevin McCarthy's office in Congress, even as we speak. You think they're going to be labeled insurrectionists? You think if they prop their feet up on McCarthy's desk, that they're going to get an FBI raid at their house in 6 months from now? No, because they're on the right side with respect to protesting. That means they're on the left. If they're on the left, hey, help yourself to Kevin McCarthy's office. It's happening now. Happened on January 6th. And these lunatics on the communist left, they get right up in front of the camera and say, yeah, 9/11, January 6th. They make that ridiculous comparison. It says here, in the era, this is Sundance, in the era shortly after 9/11, the D.C. national security apparatus instructed by Vice President Dick Cheney was constructed to preserve continuity of government and simultaneously view all Americans as potential threats. Here again, those terrorists were right here on U.S. soil. The Department of Homeland Security and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence were created specifically for that purpose. After 9/11, the electronic surveillance system that was originally created to monitor threats from abroad was retooled to monitor threats inside our country. That's when all of our electronic metadata came under federal surveillance. This is all during the Bush years. And then you move into the Obama years. It says when what Barack Obama and Eric Holder did with that new construct was refine the internal targeting mechanisms so that only their political opposition became the target of this new national security system. Obama took it and weaponized it against the political opposition, against anyone that would dare disagree with the dear leader. It says here, the problems we face now as a country are directly an outcome of two very distinct points that were merged by Barack Obama. Number one, the post 9/11 monitoring of electronic communication of American citizens, and two, Obama's team creating a fine-tuning knob that it focused on the politics of the targets. So there you have it. That's why. I mean, the IRS went after conservative groups, the FBI, the DOJ. They censored certain things through social media, Facebook, Twitter. It says Washington, D.C. created the modern national security apparatus immediately and hurriedly after 9/11, 2001. The Department of Homeland Security came along in 2002, and with the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act of 2004, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence was formed. Finally, it says here, when President Barack Obama and Attorney General Eric Holder arrived a few years later, those newly formed institutions were viewed as opportunities to create a very specific national security apparatus that would focus almost exclusively against their political opposition. And then you fast forward to today, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? The Proud Boys guy, Tarillo, sent him away to prison for 22 years. Why? For the January 6th protest. He wasn't there. Doesn't matter. He's the opposition. The number one problem facing the United States is white supremacy, is domestic terrorism fueled by white supremacy. We hear it all the time now. Here's the early stages of that development. That Sean Davis piece on Twitter, I've just got to give you a little bit from this. He says, in hindsight, and again, you go back, and it's exactly what my father was saying in the early 2000s. People didn't see it then. They were too busy rebuilding, or at least arguing about what to rebuild in those two holes. I played some clips from 2001 at a program 3 or 4 years ago. It was a 9/11 anniversary. All of these news reports, you remember all the Capitol Hill politicians, whether they were Democrat or Republican, singing on the steps of the Capitol in unison. And then just this wave of patriotism, people running to stores to buy U.S. flags. Sammy Sosa hitting the home run and then trotting around the bases with his U.S. flag. Sammy Sosa! White, black, brown, all colors. I mean, there was some pro-American patriotism right at that time. I mean, people were optimistic about the future. We're going to rebuild. What a symbol, though, even that demolition site, that terrorist site came to be as they argued and wrestled and went back and forth over, well, what should we put here? What would be appropriate? If Donald Trump has had his way, he would have come back bigger and stronger. He would have rebuilt in a bigger way. I mean, that was Trump before he became president, the last bit of that opening montage, saying we've got to build big. We've got to go big. We've got to make a statement. That statement never did quite materialize. Sean Davis says, in hindsight, 9/11 looks like it might have been the beginning of the end of the American empire. This is conservative author at the Federalist, that's all. It spawned the worst and most destructive foreign policy in the country's history. The government response to 9/11 birthed the constitutional abomination that is the modern warrantless surveillance state. The Patriot Act enabled the government to weaponize its vast resources against its own people. Bush's failed foreign policy led directly to Obama's presidency and indirectly to Biden's, both of which are responsible for diminishing the U.S. at home and abroad, militarily and economically. I'll just switch over to Twitter here for a second and see the last bit. He says, we generally remember, this is Sean Davis again, we generally remember 9/11 as the day that the towers came down. I wonder if historians will look back on it as the day that America started to fall. That's pretty sobering. That's a pretty sobering take on 9/11, on all that's transpired or happened since. 22 years on, if you go back to that November issue, 2001, the November issue of The Trumpet, we talked about in another article, I quoted from my father's piece, but we talked in another article about, hey, going into Afghanistan, then later Iraq, we're not going after the head of the snake. It's Iran, the number one state sponsor of terrorism. If you don't go after the head of the snake, this is not going to work out well. And since that time, I mean, we've just had these forever wars, as so many commentators are now saying. There was one little break from it all, and that was during the administration of President Trump, that man who was at the site of 9/11, just a few days after the attack, who would have thought that some, what was it, 15 years later, he'd be running for president? And then during his four-year term, there were no wars that America was entangled in. That's, of course, part of his America First agenda. He was in Iowa over the weekend, by the way, and he went to South Dakota first, and Kristi Noem there, the governor, she gave him her endorsement. And then after that, he went over to Iowa on Saturday, and I think DeSantis was there as well, got no coverage, completely overshadowed by President Trump, who went to the Hawkeyes football game. I think he visited the campus. And what struck me so much about this montage that we've prepared for you is just how well-received President Trump is among young people at this college university. I mean, it is in Iowa, okay, but still, listen to clip one.
President Trump signing one of the footballs here. President Trump, a right-hander on that.
I want you to listen as what the crowd was saying, how they looked as the former president left the stadium.
USA! USA! USA!
You can hear the chanting, you can hear the loud applause. This is imagery that the Trump campaign certainly wants Iowa voters to see. Now, ahead of all of this going inside the stadium, both DeSantis and Trump were tailgating. Trump stopped at a tailgating party hosted by a fraternity. We saw him flipping burgers, signing footballs, even tossing some of those footballs.
That last bit there, that's from CNN. So I guess DeSantis was up there too. Nobody knows, but he was up there too. If DeSantis doesn't win Iowa, his campaign's over. I mean, some would say it's over already. He's put everything he has into Iowa. And Trump goes up there for one day. But leave aside DeSantis. Just contrast. You've got Joe Biden, who's on the five-day around-the-world trip. And I'm sure he is. 5 days around the world is tiring for anybody, even anybody who's not 80-some years old. But he's in India. He goes to Vietnam. And then the gaffes, they just start pouring forth. Just view this next montage in contrast to the one that you just saw. This is clip two.
It is evening, isn't it? This round the world in 5 days is interesting, isn't it? Well, you know, there's that, one of my staff members said, remember the famous song, you know, Good Morning Vietnam? Well, good evening Vietnam. Good morning back in America. And now I will take your questions. Let me see. They told me they gave me five people here. Nandita of Reuters.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question, Mr. President.
Benefit. And guess what? In addition to helping the environment overall, and the only existential threat humanity faces, even more frightening than a nuclear war, is global warming going above 1.5 degrees in the next 10 years. It'd be real trouble. There's no way back from that. And the Indian scout, the Indian looks at John Wayne and points to the Union soldier and says, he's a lion dog-faced pony soldier. Well, there's a lot of lying dog-faced pony soldiers out there about global warming, but not anymore. All of a sudden, they all realize it. It's a problem. And there's nothing like seeing the light. I'm just following my orders here. Staff, is there anybody having spoken to? No, I ain't calling on you. I said I had five questions. Anita from VOA. If you don't have a game plan, he may have a game plan. He just hasn't shared it with me. But I tell you what, I don't know about you, but I'm going to go to bed.
What did you talk about with Mr. Lee? You said you spoke to the number two from China who was in India today?
Yeah.
We talked about
at the conference overall. We talked about stability. We talked about making sure that the third world, the southern hemisphere had access to change, had access. It wasn't confrontational at all.
Thank you, everybody. This is a press conference. Thanks, everyone.
Mr. President, why do you think it is that? Mr. President, are you calling us in terms of human rights here in Vietnam? Are you putting U.S. strategic interests above human rights?
I've raised it with every person I've met with.
Mr. President,
are you worried about your son being indicted, Mr. President?
Cue the jazz music and exit stage right, I guess. This is something initially when we saw the 30 or 40 second clip on Twitter, it didn't even seem real. The music, what? The nightclub music? And then the gaffes, some of that used to be kind of funny. I know, people would laugh at it. It's not funny, though. And then you have to wonder, what is the dear leader thinking? He went around the world. And yeah, he was a lot more charismatic and well-spoken, but he was also bowing before America's adversaries. He wanted to pull America down a notch or two. So you have to think that as disastrous as this Biden administration is, a fake one at that, that the dear leader has to be smiling. I mean, this is fulfilling his grand vision for the United States, fundamental transformation. Now, there's some signs that again, Biden may not be the one running next year. And as I said last week, the dear leader and him and his family, I mean, they're being exposed as frauds. So he's probably in a pretty difficult position. I mean, just looking at it personally. But as far as the fundamental transformation is going, it's going according to plan. Just that 4-year interruption between 2017 and 2021. If you leave that aside, it's all going great the way they view it. Victor Davis Hanson says, in the last 20 years, the left has boasted that it has gained control of most of American institutions of power, or America institutions of power and influence, corporate boardroom media, Silicon Valley, Wall Street, the administrative state, academia, foundations, social media, entertainment, professional sports, Hollywood. It says, with such support between 2009 to 2017, Barack Obama was empowered to transform the Democratic Party from its middle-class roots and class concerns into the party of the bicoastal rich and subsidized poor, obsessions with big money, race, a new intolerant green religion. You heard some of that there from the fake president. And dividing the country into a binary of oppressors and oppressed. It says all the levers of the power and money are on the side of the revolutionaries. Here again, that's been in our literature for a long time. The communist infiltration of the United States. It was prophesied. He was right. We've got a brochure that goes by that name. Request a copy of that as well. All the levers of power and money are on the side of the revolutionaries. It says the people are not. And they are starting to wake to the notion if they do not stop the madness in their midst, they very soon won't have a country. So it's the people, the populist movement, against all of those powerful organizations that the communists now control. President Biden, there's an article here. Actually, let me just see how much that I have. Maybe I could comment again on this development in New Mexico. The governor comes out. They've had these horrible shootings, even little children getting caught up in the crossfire. Crime and violence on the rise in New Mexico, of all places. It says here, Governor Michelle Grisham vows bipartisan effort to fight crime. It says the state's largest city, that would be Albuquerque, has had back-to-back years of record homicides, and some residents in Albuquerque and elsewhere have complained about not feeling safe in their communities. Retail crime has also been on the rise, with businesses losing millions of dollars to smash-and-grab schemes. So it's out of control. And the Democrats control the state legislature. She's a Democrat, this governor, who's come out and said she's basically now above the law. Listen to this clip from, I think this is Friday, clip 4.
Isn't it unconstitutional to say you cannot exercise your carry license?
With one exception, and that is if there's an emergency, and I've declared an emergency for a temporary amount of time, I can invoke additional powers. No constitutional right, in my view, including my oath, is intended to be absolute.
Even her oath. Nothing is absolute. The Constitution is not absolute. There's all kinds of calls for her. Even Ted Lieu, he's the Democrat in D.C., and David Hogg, he's the activist trying to get rid of guns. Both of them came out and said this was unconstitutional. Quite a few others are saying she should be arrested. Notice, though, you know how? You know the reasoning behind this measure? Well, it's a health emergency. They had the trial run in 2020 and nobody pushed back. The health emergency gave them all of these dictatorial powers. They could lock things down. They could mandate shots. They could do whatever they wanted. You had to wear a mask if you went into this establishment. There were businesses shut down because they kept operating during the COVID hysteria. And along comes another health emergency. And you better believe, little New Mexico, this is another trial balloon. Just put it out there. I mean, it's all the way in with just doing away with the Second Amendment. But hey, let's try it out in New Mexico and see how the people react. Well, as I said, some protesters are taking to the streets with their firearms in hand. This is from Fox News. Democratic New Mexico Governor Michelle Grisham is coming under fire from members of her own party after temporarily suspending open and concealed carry across Albuquerque under an emergency health order. See, the people, she's going after the people who aren't shooting people. The cartels, all of the criminals coming across the border, some of them with weapons, they're just roaming the streets of Albuquerque. And she does nothing to go after them. She does nothing to close the border. They simply don't talk about the border because they don't want to. They know it looks bad. And they can get away with this because the state Senate, blue. The state House, blue. The probably all the top positions underneath the governor, blue. They control the state. So they just ignore the problem at the southern border. The illegals aren't ignoring it. They're streaming through there just like they are in Texas, just like they are in Arizona. It says here, I support gun safety laws. However, this order from the governor of New Mexico violates the U.S. Constitution. That's from Democratic Rep. Ted Lieu in the U.S. House. This this violates the U.S. Constitution. You know it's bad. You know it's a communist power grab when Ted Lieu, the Trump-hating, dark blue Democrat Ted Lieu, sounds kind of nice. I'll have to coin that phrase, maybe make a t-shirt. Carrying on, it says, Lujan Grisham temporarily suspended open and concealed carry laws in this county for 30 days starting September 8th. The announcement was spurred on by fatal shootings that have happened in the city. It quotes her as saying, as I said yesterday, the time for standard measures has passed, the governor said. And when New Mexicans are afraid to be in crowds, to take their kids to school, to leave a baseball game, when their very right to exist is threatened by the prospect of violence at every turn, something is very wrong. So, in her words, hey, my oath, it's not, there's no absolutes here. If it's a health emergency, just suspend. Suspend the Second Amendment. And we're going to do it for a month, and then we'll reevaluate. It's just exactly from the COVID playbook. Just give us 15 days to stop the spread. And then we'll be done. Everybody can return back. All, everyone in America said, well, okay, I guess 2 weeks. And then what happened? 2 years later? Djokovic couldn't even get into the U.S. Open last summer. That's 2022. That's 2.5 years later. And then he wins the U.S. Open yesterday. Good for him. Play that. I was going to reserve it for later, but I'm running out of time. Play the Djokovic. This is perfect. You can't make this stuff up. Djokovic, he's invited back to the U.S. Open, and he wins the U.S. Open in 3 sets over Medvedev. And they can't put on the screen that Medvedev is Russian because, you know, if he's Russian, he must be Vladimir Putin's stooge. So they do invite him, though, but they can't point out that he's Russian. Just crazy. This is ESPN, owned by Disney, and then sponsored by, wait for it, sponsored by Moderna. Listen to clip 3.
Well, we'll take you to the Moderna shot of the day, and it was
saving the match point.
Oh, the match point to get to number 24. There were a lot of shots that were highly impactful, but here's the final one. Another day at the office. Relief and release there. So the shot of the day brought to you by Moderna.
This is the highest profile athlete anti-vaxxer in the world. He's perhaps the best male tennis player in history. He's not invited to the U.S. Open last summer because Joe Obama says no can do. He doesn't get the vax. He can't come to America. So they finally lift the gates, the crazy COVID gates, and let Djokovic, is he 36? 36 years old. The man who says, hey, age is just a number. I'm not going to get that vax. No way. I'll stay home if I have to. He stays home and then he comes back. And how perfect is it that the Moderna-sponsored U.S. Open points out the shot of the day for anti-vaxxer Novak Djokovic? Good for him. Good for that man. He's a man of principle, quite unlike the executives at ESPN and Disney, and Moderna, for that matter. This article, just to forgive me for bouncing around, but since we're on Djokovic, here's the New York Post. It says the steady increase in cancer cases among young people could be chalked up to red meat, salt, alcohol, says new research. The title in the New York Post, cancer in people under 50 surges by 79%. And the cause? Well, meat and alcohol, of course. Red meat. Yeah, it's been around for the beginning of time to now, but now we understand that there's a 79% increase in cancer. It says a study published Tuesday analyzed data from 1990 to 2019, finding a 79% surge in new cancer cases in people under 50. In 2019 alone, early onset cancer cases in that group totaled 3.26 million, an increase of 79% since 1990. So, I mean, that figure's from pre-COVID hysteria. But still, not saying that it's all the jab, but of all the new things that human beings, particularly in the West, are putting in their body, they're really going to try to pin this on red meat, salt, and alcohol. Yet another study that you simply cannot trust. But just to come back to this, it's the same playbook. That's why I wanted to tie it in. But hey, there's the health scare in 220. That gave license to all kinds of little dictators to just lower the boom on their own people. This governor in New Mexico, I mean, she was in a tight race last time just because of the disaster, the chaos at the border, and because of the crime in the cities. And people are concerned about leaving a baseball game with their kids and being safe. And so what does this governor want to do? She wants to take away the handgun that some of those families maybe have tucked away in their glove compartment in the car so that they can't defend themselves. And meanwhile, the cartels, they're just running the southern border. And Joe Obama is saying loud and clear, hey, have at it. Help yourself. Do whatever you want. The human trafficking, the sex trafficking, the drug, the fentanyl coming in. Carrie Lake's, she's like the only voice out there talking about the fentanyl, killing over 100,000 Americans per year. It says here, liberal gun control activist David Hogg, this is that article about how even Democrats say this is a line or a bridge too far. David Hogg responded to Lou saying that he agreed that the order violates the Constitution. It quotes him as saying, I support gun safety, but there's no such thing as a state public health emergency exception to the U.S. Constitution. That's from David Hogg, who's not exactly a constitutional expert. You can't just set aside the Constitution for a health crisis. But that's what they did in 2020, and you see, they got away with it. They got away with it. What about the southern border there in New Mexico? Washington Examiner, it says there's a simple reason New Mexico's border situation doesn't get as much attention as Arizona to the west and Texas to the east. Democrats are in full control of the state's government and they don't want to discuss it. When they know it's a disaster, when they know it's a dumpster fire, they just ignore it. They just don't discuss it. When they know it makes them look bad, they just pretend it's not really happening. Or if they're pressed a little bit, they say, hey, just like KJP said about Joe Biden, he's done as much as anyone in history to secure the southern border. There's an additional reason New Mexico attracts less notice for illegal crossovers than its neighbors. Federal agency classifications that can keep the state's profile low when it comes to illegal immigration. There are no U.S. Customs and Border Protection sectors in New Mexico, the fifth largest state by landmass. It says Texas has multiple border sectors along with Arizona and California. Even Vermont, the seventh smallest state, has its own sector up north along the U.S. border with Canada. It says there are three border crossings in New Mexico compared to six in California, six in Arizona, and 20 in Texas. Even though at 179 miles, New Mexico's border with Mexico is longer than that of California. So a few reasons as to why the problem, the chaos, the disaster at the border gets virtually no coverage. I mentioned on Friday's show this effort to go after the journalist, the broadcaster. I think he works for Alex Jones. They want to get him in jail for 4 months just because of some of the things he said. This is the attack on America. Joe Obama, Barack Obama, the dear leader, pulling the puppet strings. It says here, well, let me just first play this clip. I don't think we got to this on Friday, but this is, they sentenced, or they haven't sentenced him yet. They convicted Peter Navarro. Contempt of Congress never happens to anyone like Eric Holder. Forget that. But Navarro, because he was in Trump's administration, now he awaits his prison sentence. I think it's going to be in January. And then there are all the talking heads hyperventilating over Rudy Giuliani finally getting America's mayor. Speaking of 9/11 anniversary, I mean, here's Giuliani, perhaps at least at that time, perhaps the most famous mayor in American history. America's mayor, he was called. And now the regime media, they just love it. Listen to them going on, celebrating about Navarro and Giuliani. This is clip 5.
Peter Navarro, who was the trade advisor for President Trump, and now was convicted tonight of contempt of Congress for not complying with the subpoena for the January 6th committee. He is the second person to face that. He says he's going to appeal executive privilege. But what could he be facing here?
I think he faces something from 1 month to a year, according to the statute. There's actually
in terms of prison time. I'm sorry, I still mean, does anybody watching comprehend paying $100,000 for a dinner for anything? Never mind Rudy Giuliani's legal bills. I mean, I cannot get my mind around this. It does raise the question, though, right? Rudy Giuliani is so crucial in all of these cases that Trump is doing this now. Is there a risk of Giuliani, I guess, for lack of a better word, flipping if Trump doesn't help him in this way?
Look at how much coverage those stories get. And meanwhile, you go down to the south of New Mexico. You look at what's happening in Albuquerque. Nothing. Nothing, no coverage, no discussion. Don't bring on the expert to analyze the root cause of these problems. Let's talk about Peter Navarro. This piece from the Post-Millennial. A court document filed on Tuesday has revealed that the Department of Justice prosecutors are seeking a 120-day sentence for InfoWars host Owen Schroyer, who did not enter the Capitol building on January 6th. The Biden DOJ claimed that Schroyer spread election disinformation paired with violent rhetoric to viewers in the months leading up to January 6th. So just because he was out there exercising his free speech in the months leading up to it, the DOJ, the Dear Leaders DOJ, all of those agencies that were just thoroughly weaponized by Barack Obama from 2009 to 2017. They're going after this guy now. That's the way Obama operates. He goes in for the kill. He goes for blood. Schroyer did not stop at the sight of tear gas or sounds of explosions on the worst side of the Capitol. He continued marching around the top of the east step. Further on it says, Schroyer did not step foot inside the Capitol. He did not need to. Many of those who listened to him did instead. That's the DOJ position. Well, I'm about out of time. I'll just give you one last plug for America Under Attack. You see it so clearly now, especially in these 22 years following that deadly attack on 9/11. 22 years on, today's the anniversary, and it's nice to see some of the sentiments that are out there, even driving past Oak Cliff Fire Department, just around the corner here. The U.S. flag at half mast. I mean, a lot of people still, I know there's the ceremonies there at the memorial in Manhattan, in lower Manhattan, but that landscape as President Trump, or who would become President Trump, as he said, that landscape was forever changed when they brought those buildings down. And what a metaphor for what's happening to the United States since. If you want to submit some feedback to the show, you can email us at td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget about my Twitter handle. You can get to my feed at Stephen Flurry, Stephen with the PH. Don't forget about the LFA broadcast tonight, 9 p.m. on the East Coast, 8 p.m. Central Time. You are listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.